I'm a servant. A servant of that guy that's standing over there in that group of guys. And his name's Caleb. I've served in Caleb's family since before he was born. And I grew to love that guy like a father loves a son. Last year, he got married to a wonderful young woman from the other side of our town. We live in Cana, 16 miles on the other side of the lake, up in the hills on the west. I don't know how it is in your town, but in Cana, when there's a wedding, they do it right. It's the old way. They wait for a year after the couple is betrothed, and then on the night of the wedding, the groom meets with some of his close friends, and they light torches at dusk, and they walk through the town, and they go up to the bride's house. In this case, it was up on a hill, and she's out there waiting, and this procession's coming up the hill. It's just a beautiful thing to see. And then there's a ceremony of the actual wedding that takes place up there. And then the new couple is covered with this beautiful canopy that is a portable thing. And then the torches are lit up again, and the procession goes back down through the town and wanders around through the town until it eventually winds up at the groom's home, in this case, Caleb's home. And then a party begins, a festival, a feast, a wonderful time of sharing food and drink and fellowship, and it lasts for days. And that's the way weddings are supposed to be done. And that's the way Caleb wanted his wedding to be done, because he was determined that his wife should have all the blessings of a perfect and beautiful wedding. And nothing should be spared, regardless of the fact that money was so tight. It'll be a number of years before we climb out of the hole that we were in. But Caleb saw this wedding coming, and he began to save and sacrifice, and he put aside money to pay for all of the food and the drink that would be necessary. And the things that he couldn't afford to buy, he managed to borrow. Tables and all those ceremonial washing pots that you have to wash the feet of the guests according to the law of Moses, and then to wash their hands when in between the courses of the meals. And Caleb, he wanted every detail just right. And he said, instead of just a few pots, let's get the perfect number. Let's get 7 of these together. And it was a great plan, except for at the last minute, one of them cracked and it wouldn't hold water. So we only had 6, which was kind of embarrassing. But nevertheless, you get the idea of it. He just wanted everything to be done just right for his bride. The details of the wedding were covered by friends. One of his pals offered to be the kind of like the master of the feast or the steward to kind of arrange when various things would happen so that Caleb could just relax and not cover any of the details. They'd be treated like king and queen for a week, essentially. I think it was either a close relative or a good friend from Nazareth, a woman named Mary. She agreed to handle the food preparation and make sure that everything was handled on time and in the right way. And as nice as she was, she really knew how to say no when that was the right word to say. And so we heard that a lot from Mary. But nevertheless, I liked her a lot. And she had a son that was obviously invited to the wedding. And the son of Mary was none other than Jesus, the one that was speaking to us this afternoon on the hill. Well, I heard rumors that Jesus would be coming to this thing and that he was some kind of a holy man. And my heart sank. I was dreading him being at the wedding because we got all this preparation to make it such a wonderful party. And then this holy man had to come. And I had experience with this. Whenever one of the priests or the Pharisees would come by the house, it was as though all the joy was just sucked out of everything. Everybody got so careful what they said and how they acted. The smiles evaporated from faces like dew on a hot morning. It just took all the life out of things when these holy people would come around. And so I was kind of reluctant to have Jesus come. But when he did come, I noticed right off the bat that he was different than all the others. I noticed it right at the beginning, because when I knelt down and began to wash his feet, he looked me right in the eye. He called to me. I had to look up to see him, and he looked me straight in the eye, and he said, "Thank you for what you're doing." Well, nobody says that to a servant. But he did. The Pharisees, when I washed their feet, they pretend it's not happening, as though it's, you know, it's above them to even, you know, be touched by someone like me. And they treat me like a piece of furniture or something. But not Jesus. Every time I washed his hands at the meal, every time I served food to him or wine or whatever, he would look at me every single time and thank me. And I discovered that his laughter came naturally and freely, and he was having a good time with his disciples and the other guests. Did I mention that he invited some of his disciples to come? Now, they weren't on the original guest list, I'm pretty sure. Cana is a little town. It wasn't a very big wedding in the first place. And for Jesus to show up with, you know, a handful of other guys, I'm sure that had Mary really struggling with the food and the drink and so forth. But they were having the time of their life. And it just kind of raised the level of joy that he was there. And it was such a wonderful thing. And maybe that's why the wine gave out. I'm not sure. But when it started to look low, and we told Mary, she said, "Well, water it down a little bit more, you know, add an extra measure of water to it." And we tried that, but, you know, pretty soon the inevitable was coming up on us, and the wine did give out. And again, I don't know what it was like in your town, but in Cana, this just doesn't happen. I mean, on an ordinary day, a stranger is walking by. We take our hospitality duty as a sacred duty to provide food and drink and a place to stay if he needs it. It's a sacred duty according to the law. So, you know, in a wedding, for heaven's sake, of course the wine has got to be in plentiful supply, the food in plentiful supply, so everybody just relaxes and has a good time. Otherwise, the marriage itself is off on the wrong foot. So, well, here we are, just a few days into the thing, and the wine is giving out. So I told Mary, and what she did really, this is where it started to get weird. This is where things started to become strange, because the first thing she did was go get Jesus and bring him over, and she says, "Jesus, they don't have any more wine." You know, not my place to say anything. I'm just standing there watching and listening, ready to do whatever. And I'm thinking to myself, why did she get Jesus involved? You know, what's he going to do? He's a guest at this thing. Is he supposed to go out and go down and get some wine somewhere? What is the deal? And I'm standing there, and then it got even more strange, because Jesus spoke back to his mother, and he said, "Woman." Whoa, what is this? He called her woman. You don't call your mother woman. And it was almost an insult. And yet his voice was so gentle and so loving that it didn't really fit with calling her woman, and yet it was very firm. It was not mother, it was woman. And then he went on to say things that were, you know, why are you involving me in this? My time is not yours to dictate what I do. Words to this effect. It really had the impact of saying, "Mother, from this moment forward, we cannot have the relationship ever again where you presume upon my time and activity because you're my mother. From this moment forward, you're another woman that I know and care about very deeply. But my time and what I choose to do is prioritized by a whole different set of instructions that is not yours to make." You know, this was making me feel very awkward. I mean, we servants hear a lot of stuff behind the scenes that you wouldn't believe. But this was one that really stood above the others, because I was just expecting Mary to get very offended and put out by this, and there'd be a little scene back there by the wine supply. But she didn't. She accepted it. She understood what he meant. And she, I could just see that it was okay with her, which was amazing to me. And then she was still his mother. She said, okay, and she turned to me and she said, do whatever he says to do. And she left. She left it in his hands anyway. And I thought, boy, that's just like a mom. And she walked off, and I'm watching Jesus, and he's looking around the crowd. And he's looking at the bride and groom, and they're back there. They're just enjoying themselves thoroughly. They're caught up in the celebration. And I see this look of deep understanding and compassion on his face that touched me to the center of my bones. That he understood what was about to happen and the impact that that would have on this precious celebration. And then he started looking around for what to do, and his eyes fell on these six water pots. And of course, I was feeling a little, it's too bad we had six and not seven, but that didn't matter to him. And he looked at me and he said, go get some water and fill those up. Fill them all the way up to the top. Make it so that the water is quivering at the edge of every one of those pots, ready to run down the side. Well, we servants have a privilege, really. We don't need to worry about whether something's going to work. We just do it. It's not our deal if it works or not. We just do what we're told. But because each one of those pots was like 20 or 30 gallons, we had plenty of time to mutter to ourselves about, that's not going to do anything. Fill up the ceremonial water pots. What? How's that going to fix the wine situation? And then it got really strange. He said, now you got the pots full. Now dipper some of that out into the wine pitcher and take it to the steward. Well, that wasn't just crazy. That was scary. Because if that steward received this pitcher of supposedly wine from me and there was water in there, and he found out that we got that water from the washing pots, I'd be punished very severely. And I knew that. And yet I didn't have a choice. So with fear and trembling, I took that pitcher over and I presented it to Caleb's friend. And when he poured that out, I don't expect you to believe this, but I swear to you it's the truth. That water had turned into wine. And it wasn't just any old wine. It was the richest, smoothest, sweetest wine that anybody had ever tasted. The steward was flabbergasted. He said, Caleb, how come you saved the good wine till later? And they were passing that out, and everybody was tasting it and marveling about it. And I was like, you could have knocked me over with a feather. I was like I was in a trance, putting one foot in front of the other. And I ran back, and I went to check the other pots to see if they had the same wine in there. And Jesus is back there, and he had the most delighted look on his face. He was really enjoying this moment. And when he saw me come in, he looked at me, and his expression on his face was like, you don't see that every day, do you? And I wanted to say something to him, but I could not think of what to say. And he gathered his disciples over, and I was standing there listening, and he said to them, do you understand what I have done? And he said to them, this was not just a miracle. This was a sign. It means something. Do you have the eyes to see what this means? And I looked at the disciples, and their mouths are kind of hanging open. They looked bewildered, but they nodded their head. And they didn't get it. I I'm sure they didn't. And I didn't get it either. And that puzzled me for the rest of that day. I was thinking, well, what did that mean? What is the deal with that? And then day after day, week after week, since that, I keep going back to that event, the most wondrous thing I've ever seen in my life. And what did it mean? It was a sign. It meant something. But what? And I never could figure that out until this afternoon. Do you remember when Jesus was speaking, he said, I didn't come to abolish the law. I came to fulfill it. Remember that? And when he said fulfill, the picture in my mind was him saying, go fill those pots full. And I remembered, you know, those pots are there because of the law of Moses. Those pots are from the law. They're to wash feet and make people clean. Now, I've washed a lot of feet in my day. And I'm here to tell you, that doesn't do it. Wash feet all you want, they still stink, most of them. I mean, the road dust and the mud. And it really doesn't make any difference who you are. You're still going to get that dirt on your feet. And that little ritual that we go through because of what Moses said doesn't really clean the feet. Not completely. And even if you, I mean, let's suppose we decided, well, we're going to do this right. We're going to get soap and a brush, and we're going to scrub and get all, you know, under the toenails and everything. You get them just sparkling. That's just the outside. In my experience, even when your feet have been cleaned, your heart is still dirty. That's true for me. It's true for everybody I know, but it's especially true. And again, I know I'm taking a risk to say this, but I stand by it. It's what's right. It's especially true for the people that think they're all religious and righteous. That's just the way it is. They look down their noses at everybody else. They think they're all holier than now because they spend all day long doing what? Trying to obey the law. Maybe they try to obey it in their sleep. I don't know, but it does not make them clean on the inside. I can see the jealousy in their eyes. I can see the greed. I can see the hatred. I can see them killing great parties by their dead and dreary hearts. They're not clean on the inside, no matter what the law said to do. And so these pots that were half empty, and the one that was cracked and unusable, I realized were a symbol, a living metaphor of the law. And Jesus said, I didn't come to remove those. I came to fill them up, to bring them to their intended purpose. And he changed the nature, the character of what was inside them by changing it from water into wine. Now you think about the difference between these and you get the idea of this. Because water in a washing pot is meant to be administered on the outside of the body to cleanse the skin, what people can see. But wine is taken inside and affects the heart from inside out, bringing joy. And I realize, I mean, it's not talking about literal wine any more than literal pots and water and so forth. He's talking about the law was designed to make us clean so that we could have contact with God, so we could be in fellowship with God and be brought to fullness and righteousness. And it didn't work, no matter how hard we try. Even the ones that spend their whole lives trying to follow it can't get there. And Jesus said, I come to bring you new wine, to fill you with my Spirit, to make you full inside, to change you from the inside out. And people have been asking all over this hill this afternoon, what does his teaching mean? That's what it means. That's why he's here. To bring us that new wine, that Spirit, that fullness, that joy.